Welcome to Meeting of the Minds, July 30th, 2023 edition. Today we're talking about gender identity. And the first thing is, somewhat surprisingly, gender is a neologism here. I looked up in my favorite dictionary, which is the Random House College Dictionary, gender. Grant one, grammar, a set of classes of nouns, membership in a particular class being shown by the form of the noun itself or by the form of the choice of words that modify, which is, you know, other languages have the masculine, feminine, maybe the neuter. B, one class of such a set. C, such classes are sets collectively. D, membership of word in a grammatical form. Two, sex. So it was not generally used to mean the feminine gender. It was not largely used to mean male versus female until recently. I think it's probably badly motivated. I think the reason it switched is to separate masculinity and femininity from sex, that is, from sex, the sex act. I was going to say the objectivist, but really you can't have an objectivist philosophy's view of psychology. So let me first go over Ayn Rand's Ayn Rand's understanding of the sexual roles. There are two levels of sexual role. One is the physical, and the other is what used to be called psychosexual identity, which is that set of ideas, attitudes, and actions stemming from your consciousness, from your psychology, in relation to the issue of masculine, let's call it the issue of masculinity versus femininity. Ayn Rand thought that sex, the physical side of it, not the psychosexual identity, but the sex of male or female, was based on physical differences, and then the psychosexual identity is a response in consciousness to one's awareness of oneself as having one physical identity or another. So she laid out, and this is Brandon talking, but he obviously got it from her and was published in The Objectivist as not his theory, but as the truth. This is in an article, Self-Esteem and Romantic Love in the Objectivist of January 1968, part two. Oh, here's a good statement. When psychosexual identity, when sexual personality, he calls that an interesting phrase, is the product and reflection of the manner in which one responds to one's nature as a sexual being. Just as one's personal identity in the wider sense is the product and reflection of the manner in which one responds to one's nature as a human being. And then he concretizes it. It's worth reading that. To what extent is one aware of oneself as a sexual entity? What is one's view of sex and of its significance in human life? How does one feel about one's own body? This does not mean how does one appraise one's body aesthetically, but rather, is one's body experience as a value, as a source of pleasure? Close friend. How does one view the opposite sex? How does one feel about the body of the opposite sex? How does one identify the respective sex roles of men and women, man and woman? How does one evaluate one's own sexual role? And does one feel confident in regard to it? It is his answers to such questions that determine, for good or for bad, a human being's sexual psychology. And then he goes on to say it relates to one's general psychology. A healthy masculinity or femininity is the consequence and expression of a rationally affirmative response to one's own sexual nature. Now, in that biological video, the biologist video that I recommended on HBO, and again I guess you didn't know I recommended it, unless you went to the member forum. I recommended listening to it again. He says, biologically, there are only two sexes, male and female. And his conceptualization of it, which I think is close, but maybe not exactly right, is that the body, that masculinity is a body organized around creating sperm and having the consequent function in reproduction. The woman, female biologically, is the egg producer, and someone whose body is organized around that role. So he says it is not a matter of DNA, although that, you know, the X and the Y chromosomes, is that may be responsible, or we now know that it is responsible, maybe not in a linear way, for how one develops bodily, in a bodily term. But it would be wrong, he thinks, to use that as the ultimate test. I think that's right. I think that I would put it a little bit more cleanly that there is the producer of the sperm and the producer of the egg. And that's it. I'm not, you know, everything else follows from that in normal development. Now, interestingly, Ayn Rand does
not. Hey, Harry.
Yeah.
Sorry for the interruption. But one of the reasons that I thought was really interesting of why he said it's not just the chromosomes is that in some species that have sex selection, it's not determined by the chromosomes. It's determined by, like, an alligator's, the temperature of the eggs, whether they develop as male or female. And that's why it's not the chromosomes. It's whether the body develops to create eggs or sperm. That was wildly clarified.
I forgot that. I didn't get to that in re-listening to it. Okay, good. Thank you. So let's go back. A healthy masculinity or femininity. Are you getting an echoey kind of sound here? I am. I maybe have my volume turned up too loud on the speakers.
I'm not hearing an echo.
All right, I'll ignore it. A healthy masculinity or femininity is the consequence and expression of a rationally affirmative response to one's own sexual, physical nature. This entails a strong affirmative awareness of one's own sexuality. I think that's important. because some people don't have that. A positive, parenthesis, fearless and guiltless, parenthesis, response to the phenomenon of sex, a perspective on sex, this is the healthy now, a perspective on sex that sees it as integrated to one's mind and values, not as a dissociated, mindless, and meaningless physical indulgence, a positive and self-valuing response to one's own body, a strong positive response to the body of the opposite sex, a confident understanding, acceptance, and enjoyment of one's own sexual role. This last point requires elaboration. Now we're going to get to the three things that she sees as different that a child can, some of which a child can perceive, and some of which it picks up from how adults behave and then learns when it reaches puberty. That's me talking here. The difference in the male and female sex roles. Now, masculinity and femininity as a psychosexual response to this means accepting this in Ayn Rand's view. The difference in the male and female sexual roles proceeds from differences in man's and woman's respective anatomy and physiology. Now, here come the three things. Physically, man is the bigger and stronger of the two sexes. Now, that's definitely true, allowing for the fact that there are, it's overlapping curves. The strongest woman is stronger than the weakest man. But the norm, the mean, and the not just a very thin mean, but the overwhelming, is it the median?
Something much stronger than that. It's like 90% of the women are weaker than 90% of the men, just based on upper body strength, because their muscles are different.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't have any quarrel with this. Physically, man is the bigger and stronger of the two sexes. His system produces and uses more energy. And you can see this in little boys and little girls before they've been exposed to ideas about the sex roles. And he tends, for physiological reason, to be physically more active. Two, sexually, that meaning in the sex act, his is the more active and dominant role. He has the greater measure of control over his own pleasure and that of his partner. I think that's more arguable. I don't think that it's a knockdown. Oh, yeah, like the stronger is. I think it's true. What is certainly true is, well, I shouldn't say what's true. What is true within a limited context is that it depends on his wanting it. This is a point that doesn't appear in the article, but I think I haven't reread all the article. Used to be made in the lectures, the MBA in lectures, is that a woman can be raped, a man can't be, not by a woman. Now, so we got stronger, more active, energetic, sexually dominant, in control, depends on his will. And third, it is he who penetrates and the woman who is penetrating. I think that is important and true. It is not relative motion. Sex is not relative motion. You might say, as a friend of mine did, well, why not, you know, say that since it's all relative, why not say the man is enveloped and the woman is the enveloper? It is not experienced like that from the women I know. And I don't experience it that way. And I doubt that other men experience it that way. Now, this was also expressed this way. The man's masculinity is a matter of his relation to the world. The woman's femininity is a matter of her relation to man. Not her total self-esteem, but Ayn Rand held that femininity is hero worship, responsiveness to the heroic in the male, qua male, and that she surrendered to the man in the sex act. So she needed someone good if she's going to surrender. This example was given, which has, you know, a certain point. I'm going to distance myself from these things in a minute, but let's get the theory. Imagine six men marooned on a desert island for 2 years. There would be no danger of them becoming unmasculine, effeminate, in effect. Now imagine six women marooned on an island. Or, you know, it would be better made if you took one man and one woman, a man alone on a desert island, coping with nature. There's no question that he's going to come out maybe more masculine seeming than he went in. He's not going to come out effeminate from that, unless something, you know, he uses his free will in a bizarre way. But with a woman who spends 2 years or 6 years alone, even in the company of other women, she's gonna have an issue, let's say, retaining her femininity. She's likely to come out somewhat masculine, you know, hard, tough, which we don't think of as feminine qualities. So this was to illustrate the man's relationship to nature is essential to his masculinity, but the woman's relationship to man is what is essential, not to the world, is essential to her femininity. And then the points would always be made, yes, of course, she has to have a rational relationship to the world, or else she won't have the right relationship to man, male, but it's not the same thing. And yes, men do, to be masculine, see themselves as the protector of women, or particularly the women in their lives that they care about. But it is not the essential. So both of them do have a relationship. That's the other side of it. But it is not, that is a woman to the world and a man to a woman. But it is not the thing that defines the sexual difference and the sexual role. Now, think of the Ayn Rand's article, An Answer to Readers About, question about women president. People born after certain years, you know, have trouble with that. I don't have any trouble with it. And I think I can make it plausible to you by changing one of the measurements. The argument is a woman can be head of a business or Speaker of the House or Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but the president is kind of in charge of everyone. So a woman president would be in charge of all the men in the country, as well as all the women. And that's not a feminine role. In fact, it's anti-feminine. A woman wants to meet her superior, Ayn Rand held, to whom she can look up to and surrender to. But now you might think, that doesn't seem very persuasive, but okay, let's make it persuasive. Suppose it's a monarch. It's not the president, because I don't think the issue is how do you view the presidency? The issue is how do you view masculinity and femininity? So now picture Catherine the Great or Queen Elizabeth I, and she can say to any man, off with his head, and it will be done. So she is in charge, and she leads the troops into battle, maybe puts on the armor and leads the troops into battle. Now that is a role that I have no difficulty, and probably you don't, in accepting as, gee, that would be at odds with her femininity. I'm sure some of you push back against that, but it's a lot more understandable than the president, who's subject to checks and balances, and in the United States is not, cannot say off with your head. But imagine, to get the point, that there is a queen who is an absolute monarch. King being an absolute monarch, you wouldn't say, well, that is something a man wouldn't want to experience as a man. You would never think to say that. But you could understand that a woman, as a woman, not as a human being, but in her role as a woman, wouldn't want to feel that all the men in the country were dependent for their life or death on her whim. Men think that women want to feel that, but they don't. You know, the real Queen Elizabeth I, who had various lovers, I mean, not a great many of them, but one was, I think, Essex. And she gave him her ring, probably for this purpose, and said, I give you this ring and I give you my word. If ever I get angry at you and want to have you killed, show me the ring and you will be spared. And that's a binding promise. So she took an action to remove that power from herself. In the end, it didn't work because he was killed by her, and he had a messenger send her the ring from the Tower of London, but it came too late. What a story. So I think now, well, let me just say that Ayn Rand would be beyond horrified, very depressed about the state of romance and the trans movement and the whole zeitgeist on sex of this country, this culture, not this country. Now, let me raise some questions about it, because I'm not sure, there's like big questions. I agree with the conclusions, but I'm not sure it's been established. First of all, it seems circular. You know, the difference is, okay, physical, yes, but in sex, the man is this, that, and the other. Well, what if it's homosexual sex? The woman is penetrated. Well, what if it's another man? And either one can be penetrated. So you're already assuming that it's only heterosexual, but the this is supposed to be an argument that gets to homosexuality as a rejection of your sexual role. Now, she ended up not thinking it was necessarily immoral to do that. She she told me that she was not prepared to say privately, even though she burst out at the Fort Hall Forum question period saying it was immoral, at least psychologically. She said a couple of years later, she would not be prepared to say that homosexuality was immoral. She didn't like it, but she privately withdrew that. But it is supposed to show that there's something wrong in some way with homosexuality, even if it's innocent. It's not a normal, healthy development. Something went wrong. But it presupposes heterosexuality as a standard. Or it seems to. You know, I'm going to ask you for your views on that in a minute. The other thing, the elephant in the room, is there's no mention of reproduction here. The sex roles, sex itself evolved for reproduction. The sex roles are for the sake of, I mean, biologically, teleologically, for the sake of reproduction. Everything about the physical differences is because the woman is the child bearer. She doesn't have to, of course, bear children. And even though it used to be mentioned that the woman could be raped and that had to be something she understood and was concerned about. And, you know, we take rape, but also other things that it could happen in a way, sex act could happen in a way that's painful for her, that she doesn't want it to happen, even if it's not rape. But what about that she could get pregnant? Wouldn't that be the bigger issue until birth control? That is, until 1960, a woman's life could be thrown into chaos by getting pregnant. And if she got pregnant, there wasn't legal abortion, but even if there would be, it's a risky procedure, it's tremendously consequential for a woman to get pregnant. And then if she decides, if she does, as almost all women did, probably 92, that same 90% had children until 1960, maybe a higher percent. If she did, then in a primitive context, she had to provide the milk for the baby. She was a natural caretaker of the baby. The reason why women's hips are broader than men, the reason why she has breasts, the reason for all of her secondary sexual characteristics has to do with pregnancy and child rearing. And that's never mentioned. I think you know, Ayn Rand had a loathing of that. You would think she would actually stress it. The woman can get pregnant and she knows it. Little girls, you know that they could be mommies. She certainly was vehement on the subject of abortion, more vehement than I would be, although I'm pretty strongly against it. I mean, I'm very strongly against it, but she was really livid, and she thought that if a person was anti-abortion, that kind of wrote him out of any discussion of politics.
Just to clarify, you're pro the right to abortion, you're not anti-abortion.
I mean, there's always the double negatives in that. Yeah, thank you. Now, if reproduction should be involved here, you get, if you bring it in, you get a lot of things that make sense now in the woman's having to be wooed and won over because she has a lot at stake, and the man being capable of one-night stands without relationships and casual sex, being capable of that, being okay with that more than a woman could possibly be, because it's for her, her whole life is at stake. Or was until, and even post-1960, the pill is not infallible. So you're playing Russian roulette with something that has 500 chambers rather than just six chambers of a revolver, but you're still playing Russian roulette. It also—
It's 50 chambers, 98% effective.
Really, the pill?
Yes.
That's disappointing. It also explains, if you bring in reproduction, it explains this man to the world, woman to man thing. Sex for her means maybe baby, not to turn into Buddy Holly, but maybe baby. He had a song with that title. Whereas for the male, you know, he risks being immoral, but he can always walk away. And many of them do. So you can see why a woman who would be concerned with a relationship, what are your intentions? Are you going to marry me? You know, traditional questions. Whereas the man regards it as ending when the act is ending, or at least could regard it that way. Now, let's ask one more question, then I'm going to turn it over. So I'm posing them as, I'm not putting forward any doctrine or view here. I don't know why reproduction isn't in here. I don't know if this some of these things are circular. These are questions that I have. And here's a bigger one that has been raised. When it comes to self-esteem, another psychological need, and pleasure, a psychological need, you can see the connection. You can see why it's needed. That is why you go out of existence. The need is that which is required for your continued existence. All needs are existential needs. Only some of them are weaker or longer range than others. You can see why a guy who can't trust his mind is in danger of dying or of not having the will to live. You can see why a guy who can't get pleasure is not going to be rip-roaring motivated to do things that his life requires, because what's his reward? But what is the connection to need here? Why do you need to accept your role? That's a real question. I'm not saying, oh, why do you need? I'm saying, why? What's the reason? I think there might be a reason. It was explained back in the day as you have a need for pleasure. Sex is the most intense pleasure, at least potentially. And therefore, it's very urgent for you that you be fit and desirable for sex. But if sex is not framed in terms of reproductive role, why are you not going to get sexual pleasure if you take one of these lifestyle options that are so popular today? I mean, does that still hold up? If you don't want to be a man, if you rebel against that, you're not going to get any sexual pleasure in life. So the connection to why it's needed, why enacting or accepting the biological role that you're born with is important for your survival, is needing more explanation. Let's put it that way. Excuse me, I had one final question. Oh, so imagine there, you know, I'm against the trans, really against it. The whole transitioning and trans thing, I regard it just mutilation. But suppose that this is maybe the toughest question. Suppose there were stem cells or something that you could change, a person could take who's a man, and his DNA would be rewired, his body would start to adjust, and in a month, he would become the opposite sex, or, you know, vice versa, that you could become really in, I don't know what really means, thoroughly. So that someone who inspected your body, a doctor who inspected your body, could not tell you were not born in that condition. Would it be, oh, well, you're not accepting reality if you did that? After all, we don't say if you're weak, you're not accepting reality if you work out and get strong. We don't say if you're a woman and don't have children, you're not accepting reality. We don't say if you smell and put on antiperspirant to prevent that, you're not accepting reality. If you could really thoroughly alter anything about your sexual makeup physically, and you wanted to, why would it be wrong? Why would it be a revolt against reality? My only answer to that is a very weak one, which is, if you are unhappy and want to change what you were born as, there's something wrong in that desire. That, by wrong, I mean reached by not logical processes. You know, wrong in the same way that a phobia is wrong or a neurosis is wrong. It's hard to imagine a person wanting to change a sex. Now, on the other hand, if you don't want to have a baby because it'll interfere with your productive work, that makes sense. And maybe you even recognize, well, it would be good to have children. There's a value there, but it interferes with the higher value. That's not hard to understand or justify. But I find it hard, although I can imagine cases where it would be understandable, like a child is sexually abused by its parents at a young age. A child from an age when it's too early to know otherwise accepts a bad stereotype about the sexual role. This is very common. So you think, well, to be a man, I'd have to be like John Wayne. But I don't want to be like John Wayne. I want to be a ballet dancer. That's kind of understandable. That's not necessarily, that's maybe homosexuality rather than trans. So you can imagine, I can imagine situations where just the straight route to I'm a man, I like being a man because I like myself, so I don't want, I look upon sex change with horror. But I don't think that's what's going on with the trans movement. I think it's social metaphysics and self-doubt combined with being told, oh, you'll be happy if you don't want to be a man, you want to be a woman, or you don't want to be a woman, you want to be a man. So you see the questions. Those are the questions. And I'll turn it over. We haven't got a lot of time, but let's go. Adam has his hand up.
Yes. I think, first of all, this is a question that involves enormous amounts of knowledge, some of which we don't yet have from the realms of psychology and biology and sociology. And we don't have it today. Ayn Rand had a much, much less in her day, because all those sciences have made enormous advances since then. But let me propose a different strategy to approaching the problem, which is based on Ayn Rand's epistemology. And that is, when we talk about a concept, what one needs to do, if there's an abstract concept, is number one, concretize it so that we have a specific example that we can refer the concept to, preferably several examples, but at least one. And then the path between the concept and the example gives us a way to trace the reduction of the concept to perceptual concretes.
Yeah, which, but to is, know what's a an example, you have to know what is the proper sexual role, and that's what we're trying to define.
Hold on, because I don't think that can be done without reference to an example. And the example that I wish to use, because we're objectivists, we believe in the human as a heroic being, so let me bring up Lynn Conway. Lynn Conway invented the application of software techniques
Conway. I never heard of Lynn Conway. Why don't you use Howard Roark or John Gall or Francisco D'Anconi for man?
Because they were not transsexual, so I cannot use them as examples.
Oh, so this is a transsexual. Okay.
Okay, so Lynn Conway was suffering from gender dysphoria. She started MIT, but because of severe depression from gender dysphoria, was not able to finish. And essentially, it was only 13 years later that she finally decided to do a transition. During those 13 years, she was essentially working a technician level job. After her
Which sex was she, Adam? In the
beginning? She was originally male. And became a female.
Yeah.
And from the moment of her transition, became one of the great heroes of civilization. She invented the methods that are still used in the application of software to the design of very large scale integrated circuits. In other words, people make mistakes. We're not infallible, but there are ways to make software conform to specifications. And that's how we can design microprocessor chips, signal processor chips, and so on. And she invented the way to do it.
This is completely unconvincing because I don't know her. I don't know it. I don't know if it is happy in the sexual role now, and I wouldn't take a self-report as evidence of it. It all begs the question. So I do not accept that.
Well,
overruled. I'm going to take Peter.
And wait, can I say something on that?
Yeah.
Because I think what Adam is saying is there is some objective evidence that she was in a better state psychologically afterwards than before. And that, I mean, my view is it's not clear that it would be very often that this would actually make the difference, but it's not impossible. And this is like a possibility case.
Probably. Right? I'm not prepared to deny it, but we don't have the evidence. We don't know what's going on. And you cannot take, after he found Jesus, he invented the transistor. It was before he was lolling around. That wouldn't show anything. And this is not good evidence.
Yeah, we do have dozens of similar examples where people were performing in a mediocre way, living their lives not very well, and then you have people
But what about the other? People who were performing well, had this exchange, and then are mediocre. We'd have to go look at all these things and interview them and know, or read reports of people who we really trust. It's not admissible. Peter.
Okay,
Adam, no. Peter.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I take issue with a few things you said. I particularly take issue with what Adam is just raising. But let me just get to the last question you raised about somebody who had this miracle technology, medical technology, which would allow somebody to completely transform from one sex to another, and you would not be able to tell any difference somehow. There is something amiss if you feel uncomfortable in your own body so that you want to go through this. So for example, what if I told you, what would you say to somebody, I'm dissatisfied with my nature as a human being, I want to transform into an animal, and we have the technology to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could become a porcupine.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be so clear that there is something wrong with the fact that you're unwilling to accept your nature as a human being, even if you could magically transform to a porcupine. And that's what I think is the case in the overriding majority of these situations where people transform from one sex to another. Now,
I agree with that, but I don't think the porcupine example is convincing because women are not porcupines. If you change a man into a woman, you're not changing to a lower life form where you give up your mind. I mean, some people think that about women, but I don't think
Porcupine does not, once you're a porcupine, you don't experience it as giving up your mind. You're a happy porcupine. So
no,
you're giving up something of that. No, wait.
They can't be happy. They can't be happy. Animals do not experience happiness.
Okay. The person who wants to change is unhappy. He becomes a porcupine. He's no longer unhappy.
Right.
The point is
the same would be true when he's dead. He could just kill himself.
Yes, exactly. There is something wrong. My point is this. My point is that there is something wrong if you're unwilling to accept what your nature actually is. Now, leave aside rare cases, which I grant exist, where people may have been born with mixtures of sex hormones or indeterminate sex organs or whatever. Those are rare cases. Ordinarily, this issue of quote sexual dysphoria is to me a terrible a terrible rationalization that the trans movement uses,
right,
to make it seem as though it's a trivial thing to change from one sex to another. You're unhappy, go change your sex, rather than examine what is it that you're actually, what is the cause of your dissatisfaction? What is it? Do you have doubts about your masculinity? Let me finish. Go ahead.
So, but the problem here is you said something is wrong. And what do you mean by that? Now, I do think, and I think most people would agree, that these cases, these people have probably trauma in their background, right? I mean, I think for the real serious cases, this is probably what the cause is. And you need to keep in mind that that can be completely innocent, that they didn't know how to handle a situation, and this affected their beliefs about themselves and their bodies and other people. And when you get to an adult, one of the things you need to choose is decide, if you've got psychological issues, which ones you're going to deal with and which ones you're going to manage. And what I see this kind of thing is a choice to manage an issue so that you can focus on something else that's more where you can create values. And that could be a rational decision. That could be not denying, evading the nature of your body. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some people who do that, but you've got to, if you're going to make an argument, you got to keep open that people could be completely rational. Some people could be completely rational in choosing this
the same thing
operation.
This is the same thing as was brought up with Adam, that we don't know the reason. We don't know the statistics.
It's not a statistical issue.
No,
I'm arguing on the basis of psychology, not on the basis of statistics.
So a person is unhappy with being a certain gender or sex, okay? And you were suggesting that that could be completely innocent and not easily changed because it might stem from a trauma. All right, is that 1 in 1,000 of people who say they have sexual dysphoria, or is it?
But if you're naming the principle,
what?
You need to, if you're naming the principle, you need to name it in terms that leaves that option and then explain what would make it rational to do it.
All right, let's do that. And if we say, if it, in cases in which a person is uncomfortable in their sexual, let's call it their birth sexual role because of some trauma such as being raped by an uncle or something, and if that's very hard to treat in any kind of psychological way, then a sex change operation could make sense. But
yes,
what we see is a mass phenomenon that, well, you don't want to do the statistics.
But that's a separate issue.
Because of social metaphysics, it's a crime. If they're doing it because of something that should be fixed by rethinking things, it's a crime.
Yes,
and Gene, let me
put it this way. Take Gene's argument, which is plausible. You have certain psychological problems that are causing you to feel uncomfortable, interferes with your basic ability to be happy, and there's no, we don't have the knowledge of, psychologically, the knowledge of how to alleviate that problem, how to cure that problem. So the way to assess it is, the person says, look, I have a psychological problem. I've tried for a long time to try to deal with it. I've gone to psychologists, I've gone to therapists, whatever. It's not working. I'm still unhappy. I think I will be happier if I change my sex. Fine. Then if that's the only alternative after exploring other possibilities, then he does it with the understanding that it's not simply the case, well, I was born in the wrong body, somehow God made a mistake, I'm going to change that and everything is going to be fine. The psychological problems that you have are not going to be solved. Your life may be better, you may be happier in a new sex, but it doesn't address the root cause of the problem. The transgender movement denies the fact that there is any kind of psychological problem. It's just a biological mistake. You were born with the wrong sex organs, go change them, you'll be happy. And the crime is that they do this for 12 and 13 year olds.
Yeah, well, that, so I'm 100% in agreement.
I think we can all agree that that's wrong.
Even encouraging adolescents to be worrying about this, I think this is.
Yes, but it stems from a premise. It stems from the premise that there is no such thing as a biologically fixed gender. Your gender was whatever you feel it is, whatever you want it to be, that's your gender. That's the premise underlying this encouragement of young teenagers to undergo this operation if they feel some kind of sexual uncertainty about their sexual identity.
But we're not dealing with the big questions that I raised. I want to get to Audrey and Boris, but let me just point out, what I want to know is, what is the basis of regarding the sexual roles as a need, as a valid, something that if you don't accept them kind of arbitrarily, it's very different than if you say, I'm not going to have children. Or I've got many capacities I'm not using, right? So yes, I could be a really masculine guy, but I choose not to be. Okay, we're not dealing with that, and we're not dealing with the role of reproduction in sex, sexual identity. Boris?
Hi, I want to contribute to this idea that I always think about, is that not just transsexuals, but the homosexuals, they have problem even identifying themselves, which is why they refer to themselves LGBTQ plus, I don't know. They have so many subcategories that they cannot really name themselves. And they also, they talk about pride, but they're ashamed, because if they weren't ashamed, they wouldn't come up with an abbreviation that hides their actual designations. In the LGBTQ, there are all these so many letters. It's just like a random passport. It actually hides what they are. This is the first
point. Yeah, but a given guy is, let's say, G, and he's not LB. So these are the possibilities they see.
I know, but
don't take a collectivist view of this. Just say, because some people in this group call them LGBTQ, whatever, that the individuals have that same view. I don't think that's right. We can't be collectivist about this.
Right.
That's not about this group. It's about the way the media refers to this. They are actually ashamed to say it. They will never list it out. They will always say the array of letters because that's the polite way.
Who's ashamed? The media?
Yeah.
No. It's just it's an acronym.
All right.
And second point is that if you could say like a man can be in love with a man or a woman can be actually in love with a woman fully, why is that? That they always have the roles. Like the one man would act like a woman, dress like a woman, speak with the funny voice of a woman. It just seems that they want to have a male and a female roles.
I don't think that's true. It's true in some cases, but I know gay couples where that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, can understand that if a man says, I know that argument. I like the masculine quality. So I wouldn't expect.
I know that argument, Boris, but that's not really on topic.
All right.
So let me go to Audrey. And then we'll go to the after party. Go ahead, Audrey.
What do you think about the idea of gender? Do you make a distinction between sex and gender? Where I'm coming from.
No.
No. Okay. Well, what about the idea that, but the fact that the brain, during the development of the fetus, you can have the brain develops later after the rest of the body, and if hormones influence the development of the brain separately from the rest of the body, that may explain transgenderism. What would you call that concept?
No, I find it's a very high burden of proof for that. The thinking is the same for men. Logic is the same for men and women. And I don't think there's a female brain and a male brain. And if there is, there's got to be a hell of a lot of proof of that, not just the kind of thing that goes on and is referred to as psychological studies or neurological studies have shown this. There's a lot of bad stuff out there in terms of research. So let's formally end and go right into the after party. And let's also remind ourselves that as fraught with baggage as this topic is, I'm approaching it from the standpoint, I don't have the answers and I'd like to know, and we're all colleagues here. So let's bear that in mind, even as I shut up people, because I don't accept their argument, I respect them all. Okay, let's thank you for coming and we'll continue this in the after party. This is a formal end.